You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Barry. And Arizona has its starting quarterback for 2022. Okay, I can't say for sure because it's going to be a competition. But, Brett, it seems like the good news doesn't stop with Arizona football recruiting. They added another commitment and a freshman. The transfer portal has been very, very good to the Wildcats. Picked up Jaden Delora, former Washington State quarterback, Pac-12 freshman of the year. It's hard to not get excited about what's been happening with the football program.
Yeah, I find myself in a situation where I'm sure a lot of Arizona fans are, in that I don't want this offseason to end.
Because then the games have to happen, and the games haven't been good.
But then I want the offseason to end because I'm really excited and curious to see what this new roster and this infusion of talent is going to bring. You know, there's a lot of guys that have been added, you know, not just from the transfer portal, but officially announced and looked really good at the All-American game. Rayshon Luke
looks like
an absolute stud, and somebody that, you know, he's not coming in the spring because he wants to run track, and you let him do that because also he's a guy I feel like they're just going to be able to get the ball in space and say run real fast. The old Forrest Gump play when he was at Alabama.
Well, it's the whole thing, like you can't coach talent, right? This coaches can scheme around talent to a degree, but if you just have better players, and we can talk about this, like the biggest thing with Jed Fish, like as much confidence as you may have had in him, it's like the talent is still not there with his team. And one full recruiting cycle does not just make over the roster. Like, it's not always going to become like, oh, they went from one win to 10. That's not going to be the case here. They might not go from one win to 5. We don't know, but just if you look at what they've brought in, it's speed, it's size, it's skill. It's players that had offers from other programs, other better programs. There are some who, via the transfer portal, came from better programs, from UCLA, from USC. So these are players who could have gone to so many other schools, and they're choosing Arizona. And we have a guest coming up later in the show, BJ Danker, we're going to talk to, former Arizona quarterback. He's going to give his thoughts on Arizona's recruiting, what they've done. And just you look at what Arizona's done, like how they're doing this. Is playing time part of it? Absolutely. That might be the biggest factor. Is the NIL part of it? I'm sure Arizona's doing a great job, but whatever they have to do to sell this program to bring in talent, they're doing it, and they're doing it better than anyone could have anticipated, expected, or even hoped for.
And I think it's not just about the selling of the program and the playing time available. You know, we talked when Jed Fish got hired that the person to be successful here needs to be a grinder and surround himself with grinders to be able to recruit effectively. Boy, that's proven to be the case. You know, all these guys that are coming into the transfer portal are, you know, a lot of them are, you know, they're not really allowed to talk to people, even though they may have a sense of where playing time might be. But you got to, you know, turn on a dime when some of these things are happening. And that means guys got to be available 24/7 on the staff, from the coaches on down, you know, to the off the field staff. And it's really showing up, and it's making me count the days down until spring practice because I really want to see it. And, you know, Jaden Delora, I think, is, I believe I saw that he's already on campus, so he will be there in the spring along with, you know, what, 15 other guys. And with that much talent, that really hopefully gives them a big head start to see it in on the field production. And, you know, hopefully our optimism isn't crushed by a, a tough early non-conference schedule, but right now it's all optimism and, you know, no end in sight, with maybe even a few more guys coming in the next couple of weeks, maybe by the time this is being listened to right now.
Yeah, well, if there was a shopping list, right, for Arizona this offseason, it was definitely to upgrade the talent level just all across the board. There's no position that couldn't afford to be upgraded talent-wise, but the freshman class they've landed, they brought in that speed, they brought in that size, and then if you look at the transfer portal to kind of fill in the gaps, because it's not fair to look at the recruiting class and say, they need to fix it this season. Like, they're going to be impact guys. Like, I imagine we talked, I think we did the mailbag a couple weeks ago. Like, which guys will play? Which ones, as true freshmen, will make an impact? And there's probably a decent amount of players who are going to see the field and make an impact, especially the skilled guys. T-Mac is going to play. Keon Burnett's going to play. You know, Prysock, Rayshon Luke, Deuce Lane, they're going to get on the field. Kevin Green Jr., Jonah Coleman. Like, you can go down the list and find guys, A.J. Jones, who will probably make plays this season. But if you're hoping for a quick turnaround, it was largely going to be the transfer portal. Guys who have experience in other places. Now, Jaden Delora is a special case, right? He was a starter for Washington State. He's not like the transfers Arizona got last season. I guess closest thing is Jordan McLeod, but Jaden Delora did this at a higher level at Washington State. We saw him do it against Arizona, threw four touchdown passes against the Wildcats. Like, that's great. But the shopping list they had in the transfer portal, quarterback, check. You know, defensive length and size. You know, Hunter Echols, Anthony Solomon, check. DJ Warnell, check. They just got the other transfer, too, from UCLA. Can we just call him Tisov, I think?
I really want you to take a crack at that first name, Adam.
Tisov it is, but you get him, who 6'4", 275. You need defensive line help because they've lost guys to the NFL. They've lost guys to graduation. Just when you look at what they needed, they're getting it. And does that mean they're going to be a great team next year? No, it doesn't. But they're certainly going to be a more talented team, and they're going to have quality at positions where maybe they haven't had it so much in recent years.
Yeah, it's – I don't know. And granted, you know, I am a Arizona-centric college football fan, so I am, you know, ignorant of maybe the history in other programs, but – I can't imagine there being a team that has had such an infusion of talent at once in any time I can remember.
Well, especially like maybe not infusion of talent, because you look at like a let's say, I want to say Alabama or Georgia, they bring in pretty good classes.
Well, I guess going from zero to 60.
Yeah. Arizona being a one-win team last season, winning what, one of their last 22 games, where the program was to bring in what they have just seems miraculous.
I mean, look at Tisov or Sevilla, as you call him.
Tisov.
You know, coming out of high school, he had offers to LSU, Michigan, Miami, Oregon, USC, Oklahoma. You know, that's not a guy that Arizona's used to getting. And even in the transfer portal, big programs were after him. You know, USC with Lincoln Riley was rumored to be where he was potentially a silent commit to. And we have him.
Well, why go to play for USC and Lincoln Riley when you can come to Arizona? I mean, it seems obvious.
I mean, it does to us. you know, and I'd like to revise our answers to those mailbag questions, because there's more guys that are going to contribute that are starting in the spring, as we're talking about with these transfer guys.
But isn't, you mentioned, though, getting these transfers, getting someone who could have gone to USC. When you go hire a Johnny Nansen, it's like, well, yeah, can he? We don't know if he can be a defensive coordinator, but recruiting was supposed to be his thing. And there were always doubts of, like, can you recruit these guys to Arizona? It's still Arizona. Now, granted, Tisov played for Johnny Nansen, right, at UCLA, so there's a little bit of a connection there. But Arizona, it's that cyclical thing of, like, you don't get good players until you win, but you can't win until you get good players. Arizona's kind of turned that on its head, because they have not won and they're getting good players, and hopefully that is the first step towards winning.
I mean, it better be.
it should be.
Otherwise, you know, we talked about, you know, I remember in a pod a couple of weeks back, you know, I asked you if there was, you know, what you needed to see from Jed Fish, and you didn't want to go on the record and didn't think that win totals matter. And I kind of was like, eventually it's going to matter. I think with what's happened this off season and the upgrades at a number of key positions, especially with the guys that are ready to contribute early, mainly the transfer portal guys and guys like T-Mac.
We even talked about Jacob Cowing.
Yeah. I mean,
UTEP.
Yeah, a guy who was a top 10 in the nation in terms of receiving yards last year, right? He's basically going to be a plug-and-play Stanley Berryhill clone from day one. You know, it's hard for if you're Jed Fish because I almost fear that he's going to become a victim of his own offseason success if it doesn't start to translate to on-the-field wins because, as I've said before, it's an outcome-based business. And I think that the expectation of fans is not necessarily, you know, I don't think any fans are delusional to the point where they're like, well, this is a 9-win Arizona team and we're going to the Rose Bowl next year or the year after that. But the expectation for massive improvement, I think, is there in the record. And, it's a tough non-conference schedule to start the season. We'll see how it all plays out in the spring, how well guys adopt the new system, you know, how they sort out playing time. You know, some of those, like the wide receiver room, good luck figuring out who's going to get snaps there. But, you know, how healthy are they going to be come fall? And realistically, there's still some spots that there's probably holes or question marks, i.e.
Oh, yeah.
Offensive line. But maybe there's news by the time even this is released or by the time we talk again next week, Adam. But, boy, it's hard to not feel anything but, you know, that we've leveled up in one offseason to at least being a, you know, a respectable team that's going to be a real tough out in every game next year.
Yeah, well, one of the saving graces for Fish, too, might be that the offseason is longer than the actual season. There's only 3 months of games, which means there's 9 months of offseason, and he's the best offseason coach we've ever seen in Tucson. So he at least has that going for him. But I think you're right to the extent that I haven't seen too many U of A fans saying, all right, this team is destined for greatness this season, which is good. The expectations are still somewhat in check, but if they can add offensive line talent, proven offensive linemen, then you say, okay, what are they missing? Offensively, nothing. It's a loaded receiver room. It's a really talented running back room that's pretty loaded. You have a quarterback in Delora who is proven. You're not bringing him in, like, you know he can play in the Pac-12 level. You know he can excel at the Pac-12 level. Yes, he has to learn this offense, and it's been challenging for some, but he'll be here for spring. So we'll have the time that Jordan McLeod did not have last season, right? So he has a lot of things going for him to be ready to be effective week one for Arizona. I assume he'll be the starter. I guess it's not determined yet. They'll have their – but if he's not the starter, something either went really, really right with one of the other quarterbacks or horribly wrong with him, I'm guessing he's going to be the starter. So offensively, they're an offensive line away from being a team that should be able to score some points. Defensively, they lose some talent, especially on the defensive line. But they have good corners. They have some pretty good linebackers. Now some of the transfers are affecting, you know, Hunter Echols, DJ Warnell, you know, Anthony Solomon. These are guys who are there. T-Sop, these are guys who are there to fix the defense, to help the defense. The only question mark I would really have is the coaching. Because you have a first-time coordinator, can he be that guy? Can he replace Don Brown and have this team ready to play at a high level defensively? But the depth won't be there yet, but the talent will be, if that makes any sense. Like, their starters, their top 22 are going to be probably about as good as, I don't want to say as good as a USC or as good as a Utah, but it's going to be Pac-12 level. Absolutely, their top 22, their starting 22 will be a Pac-12 level team. Like, that's not something we could have said the last few years.
I even think that the depth is probably better than you're giving it credit for.
Well, I mean,
Adam,
certain positions, yes. But,
you know,
I'm just saying, like, overall.
There's still some gaps in the depth. But you have guys, you know, it's especially on both offense and defense, the guys they're adding also can flex, whether it's like in a nickel or dime package on defense or what kind of matchups you're running against on the, you know, on the other side of the field, or, you know, getting Speedy Luke in there at a running back or a receiver, or running Keon Burnett as a split out tight end versus a blocking tight end. There's a lot of guys that are going to be able to see the field and be effective, and enough guys there. You don't have to, especially offensively, which I think we all agree was the biggest challenge last year. There's certain that the talent infusion there is going to be dramatically improved. And I think
at quarterback and offensive line, that should be enough. Like, the receivers they bring back, Dorian Singer, Mejon Wright, who didn't play last season, but there was already some talent there. It's just hamstrung by offensive line and quarterback play, I think.
Yeah, those two core limitations held the team back. And I think we talked about it. I mean, I think we literally ranked those. That? Yeah, I'm pretty sure those were our consensus top two concerns for the season, and they were correct.
We're brilliant.
And I think you're hitting on something that, you know, if I'm thinking what is my concern going into next year, I think there's a talent upgrade and a depth upgrade in general across the board. You have an unproven defensive coordinator who's never done it before. And I think we're going to find out how much Don Brown and scheme mattered compared to what Nansen is going to be able to do with a little bit better talent, maybe. Until we, you know, play on the field against somebody wearing a different set of colors, you're not going to know it, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing that's going to help Nansen out that I think is always underappreciated is sometimes, you know, the best defense is having a good offense, to paraphrase things. You know, an offense that can not only sustain drives but score touchdowns instead of field goals, maybe get significant early leads where you can change what your scheme calls are. You can have, you know, if you know they're going to be passing 65-70% of the time, you can turn pass rushers loose a little bit, and you can leverage, Arizona has pretty strong young corners and are adding some more, right? Where you can, if you can put, you know, some guys on lockdown with the, you know, Trayden Stukes, Isaiah Rutherford, hopefully is back healthy, Christian Roland Wallace, Prysock coming in. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen. You know, the offense can impact the defense's ability.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm curious to see how that plays out. And ultimately, it's just an unknown of what Nansen is as a defensive coordinator. You know, I think we talked about with Levin, you and I were talking about it separately, is like, you know, is scheme on defense the most overrated thing on you know, because there's not that many calls. It's about reaction, like Lev said. And I think you agree with that.
Reaction and winning your matchups, like defensive line, win your matchup, get to the quarterback, get to the running back. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so that's where getting a guy like Tisov, as you call him, is going
to,
yeah. But there's also still, you know, there's a lot of talent that's leaving the defensive line, which was a strength last year. But I think you saw flashes from young guys, and there's plenty of returning talent in Keon Bars, Jalen Harris. Maybe Jason Harris starts getting more reps.
Paris Shand, J.B. Brown. Yeah.
Paris Shand, you know, Tank Wilson. But Paris Shand looked, you know, they both showed flashes. You know, J.B. Brown may be back. I don't know if there's been official word on that.
Or he hasn't left, so.
He may or may not be there.
But, I mean, we're all kind of questionable these days.
I mean, and the reality is we don't know with certainty what, you know, even base formation Nance is going to run. Is it something similar to Don Brown's? Is it going to be a 3-3-5, more of a 4-2-5, something more flexible? I think with the addition of Solomon, you maybe get a sense, because he's kind of like an undersized linebacker or an oversized safety. He was recruited by Don Brown to Michigan to play that, you know, that Viper position. You know, that might be an indication.
I wouldn't think the defense, because the players that are there, they're not going to want to teach them an entirely new defense, right? And it's not like Don Brown's defense was super unique. He just blitzed a lot. Like, he was running, what, like a 4-3? Like, he ran 4-3, 3-4, had some dime nickel and stuff. Like, yeah. He ran a normal defense. He just liked to blitz. So I don't know if there's too much of a change for, like, when they had the 3-3-5. Under Castile, that's a little bit different. You recruit to a certain style, but 3-4, 4-3, it's basically the same.
It's
well, as long as you have the end, like the big ends or linebackers, and they have guys who can play kind of vacillate between those two spots. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it really matters in terms of what you recruit to on three-man front versus four-man front on the D-line.
Yeah.
And then that kind of whatever you're going to call the Viper, the fourth linebacker or the additional safety position. But even then on nickel packages, maybe you put in a third corner or a third safety rather than the linebacker type.
Which is why just having more talent, which is what they're doing, and that's what Lev said, and that's what I agree with that. And it kind of goes to what Jedfish, why he hired Nansen. Like he said, we needed a recruiter. Like you need better players. And if they have guys who can win those one-on-one matchups, if a TSOP can win those one-on-one matchups, if Solomon or Eccles can be those athletic linebackers that they need who have the speed to keep up with running backs and to get after the quarterback. Malik Reed, we forget about him. He played against ASU. Wasn't bad against ASU. Got held on a touchdown twice that they did not call on a big touchdown from Jaden Daniels. But, you know, it's if the talent is better, and I think the talent is better, then I can't see Nansen coming in and just ruining things. Like, he hasn't called a game, but in a lot of times, situations call themselves, too. And I'm not saying anyone can be a defensive coordinator. There is an art to it. There's a reason why Don Brown was thought of as a really good one, why the best are the best. But a lot of them look a lot better when they have quality talent. You know, Don Brown's defense didn't look as good in Michigan once the talent level started to drop. So, whereas offensively, I think you can maybe scheme your talent up. Rich Rodriguez was known for that. You know, you could have less talent but still score points. Defensively, I'm not sure it's as easy to. I think defensively, you need to have players who can win matchups, who can get after the quarterback without having to blitz, who can cover a receiver down the field. And Arizona has brought in more and more players who, at least on paper, seem capable of doing all that.
Yeah, I think you're right on that, especially in, you know, you need the talent on defense because they have to be have the size and athleticism to react and win those one-on-one battles. You know, I think one of the other big unknowns on the defensive side as we head into the fall, well, even in the spring camp, we might get a sense of it. There's a lot of guys that, you know, we had high hopes for from, you know, we're very excited about the current recruiting class, and rightfully so. But there was a lot of linebackers and safeties and other guys that redshirted last year that those are the, you know, what share of those guys are going to step up and be able to add legitimate depth? I'm thinking guys like, you know, DJ Fryer, Mojo Wiertz, Dalton Johnson at the safety position.
Triplett, if he's healthy.
Jabbar Triplett, you know, maybe the most forgotten guy who was looking really good until he got, you know, hit tore his Achilles. Or even, you know, I think according to 247, Arizona's highest rated commit and that may move to the defensive side of the ball, mainly due to the strength on the offensive side of the ball, James Bowles. What if he becomes a linebacker? How do you use him? You know, there's more questions than there are answers in terms of that right now. You know, hopefully as we get into the spring, we have like a little clearer sense, and we'll probably have a sense of how Nansen is as a coordinator. But I think I agree to your point that at the end of the day, defense needs more talent to make a defensive coordinator look better more than a defensive coordinator needs scheme to look like a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think so. You know what's funny, Brett? We just talked for about 20 minutes about Arizona recruiting, and we mentioned Jaden Delora, but we didn't really dive into so much his impact. And I think that just kind of goes to show that, one, it's obvious he's a talented quarterback. Two, it's obvious that Arizona needed an infusion at quarterback. We don't know what this does to the quarterback room. Like, they have, I think, now 5 scholarship quarterbacks, and that probably won't last. But, you know, we'll see who decides to transfer out, because Delora comes in, ideally he's going to be the starting quarterback. You know, Noah Fafita, Jordan McLeod would be behind him, Will Plummer, some combination, Gunnar Cruz, depending on who sticks around. I don't see this as a negative at all. I don't think Fafita sees it as a negative. I mean, everybody's like, oh, well, I'm sure he wanted to start this season. He's also a true freshman who understands that he probably wasn't going to start this season and probably shouldn't start this season. So Delora, if he comes in, has a great season, he's technically a redshirt sophomore, but he's basically a junior. If he has a great season, he could bolt to the NFL after this year, and that would be that. So, like, when a quarterback like that wants to come to Arizona, especially in the situation they're in, you take him. Like, that's a win on the recruiting trail for the Wildcats. But I think just the fact that we haven't spent 15 minutes on that goes to show how all this offseason has gone, and just the excitement that, yeah, they've brought in a lot of talent for a team and a program that needed a lot of talent.
Yeah, and I think you hit on something that it's a really important thing for Arizona fans to understand and highlight with Jaden Delora, where it's with all the COVID eligibility things where, you know, after draft eligibility is 3 years removed from high school. So after this season, he will be draft eligible. So while he has, 3 years of eligibility left?
Yeah.
In some ways, if things go according to how I'm sure Jaden Delora and even Jed Fish and Noah Fafita hope, you know, if Jaden Delora is the clear starter, has an amazing season, you still get work in some reps for other guys like Noah Fafita to develop.
He can play in 4 games and still be redshirt.
You know, Jaden Delora doesn't necessarily want to become the Perry Ellis of college football if he has a chance for making the NFL. And so you're kind of, for Arizona's position, you know, trying to thread the needle and not blocking somebody you believe in like Noah Fafita, he's kind of the perfect candidate because he has multiple years of eligibility, but he's also not necessarily a long-term block for somebody like Noah Fafita or future quarterbacks in future classes. And so it's really an ideal fit in a lot of ways. Well, plus, he's a little...
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Plus he's a similar, you know, build quarterback. You know, he can kind of, you know, help Noah Fafita understand what the translation is as a relatively slight quarterback in terms of height can mean in once you get to college and in the Pac-12 compared to what it is in high school. And also just another guy that, you know, as a sidebar, along with Tisav, look at all, you know, it's another connection to the poly community, and Arizona's going back to, you know, the Dick Tomey years of recruiting poly guys and developing that pipeline.
Yeah, and that's, you hit on one thing I was going to say too with Delora, is that he seems to be a similar type of quarterback that Arizona hopes Fafita will be. You know, not the big, good arm, not a super laser rocket arm, not 6'4", 6'5", like a little bit smaller of a quarterback, mobile, not necessarily runners, but can run if they need to. So this is someone that he could learn from, and also if Delora has that graces in and leaves and Fifita takes over next season, he'll be more ready to do so. But perhaps even more that the offense will be used to that type of quarterback. It won't be this huge change to have a quarterback who can do what Fifita does, because they would have, in theory, had one already the year before. And this, of course, it's also Arizona quarterbacks who used to say they'll all stay healthy throughout the entire season. We saw what happened last season. Arizona went into that season with all those quarterbacks and we're down to one scholarship quarterback by the time the season ended. So you need numbers there. It makes total sense to get Delora, but wow, what a good couple of weeks for Arizona football. Brett, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more Arizona football and what's going on with former Arizona quarterback BJ Danker after the break.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Welcome back to Wildcat Radio 2.0, and as promised, we are joined by our special guest, BJ Danker, former Arizona quarterback, was with the team in 2012-2013. BJ, welcome to Wildcat Radio 2.0.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. Love talking Wildcat football.
Of course. And one of the reasons we're excited to talk to you is because right now Wildcat football is kind of feeling pretty good. You know, Arizona's won one game in the last, 22 tries, and yet here we are on January 12th. Arizona has picked up a quarterback commitment, Jaden Delora, from Washington State transfer. The recruiting class has been very, very good, and people are feeling pretty, pretty good. Like, your perspective as a Wildcat fan, as an alum, as a former player, how are you approaching this program? What do you see from them?
Yeah, well, it's slim pickings when it comes to victories or something to be excited about. So, anytime you can get a victory off the field when they're scarce on the field, you're going to celebrate and you're going to be excited. But this offseason, I've been really impressed and really excited with what the coaching staff has done and where the direction of the program is.
Yes.
Yeah. So BJ, speaking of the direction of the program, it's, you know, we're recording here on January 12th, and a couple days ago, Arizona fans got some pretty big news, and you were tweeting about Jaden Delora announcing he's coming to Arizona and called him the most important commit of the offseason. I'm curious to hear your perspective as somebody that has played Pac-12 football at the quarterback position. What makes you so excited and confident in Jaden Delora, and what do you think he's going to bring to the team?
Yeah, the reason I said it was the most important because, you know, obviously the high school signings that have happened this cycle have been huge, right? With T-Mac, you know, as the highest recruit we've ever signed, and Noah at a Servite as well, and we got a 4-star tight end as well. There's been some big time guys with Speedy recently, but you have to admit that quarterback is the most important position in college football, and we don't have a lot of depth and we don't have a lot of experience in that regard, which is why I said what I did about Jalen, because, you know, he's got real game, real live action. He's been successful. He's been in the fire. And he's been really, he won Pac-12 freshman player of the year for a reason. So I thought that was huge just from a talent perspective, because I think he might be the most talented quarterback on our roster, and two, just from an experience standpoint. So that's why I was really fired up about it and happy to see. I was hoping Fish was going to sign a quarterback through the portal. You know, every time we saw a signee, I was happy. But it wasn't quarterback, and I thought he needed to get one of those guys to kind of cap off the recruiting cycle, and he did. And so I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, and I wonder from your perspective too, because like Brett and I were fans, we're podcasters. I do some writing for AZ Desert Swarm, but we approach the team, the program in a certain way from a certain perspective, and we see this recruiting class, the transfer, like, wow, this is amazing, this is great. from someone who's been a player, who's been on a team, who's been recruited, who's been there when other players have come in, what does that do for a team's psyche, for a roster's psyche, when it's like, hey, there's reinforcements coming in, like, yeah, we love this program, we want to play, but they're bringing in some major talent to the roster to help us?
You know, I don't – that's a tough question because, one, you know, I've always played quarterback. So anytime you brought in a staff brought in another quarterback, you know, you only one of them can play at a time. So you aren't always pumped about that. But, you know, I think the team and the players, not – but without talking to them, I think they know that they need as much help as they can get, and they need as much talent as they can get. And so anytime you can see, you know, slight changes – in a positive way, I think that's going to give you confidence that you're going to have some help, you're going to have some talent, and you're going to have an opportunity to win some more football games. And at the end of the day, that's what the players want. They just want to win games. And so I think it'll have some momentum, some confidence in the off season to help with those workouts, those summer workouts and things like that to help get prepared for the season mentally.
Yeah. Kind of taking off on that, BJ, what's your perspective so far as somebody that played at Arizona in terms of the culture that Jed Fish and staff are building there? What's your perception of the general health and direction of the program and the culture he's trying to build?
Yeah, I mean, I've been super impressed with him, with Jed, Coach Fish, ever since he got there off the field wise. You know, you can really tell that he's bought in and it's genuine and that he cares about the program, about the program's history. He cares about the community in Tucson. You can tell it permeates through his interviews and through his Twitter and through all the communications. So, you know, I've been impressed since day one with that. Obviously he stepped into a difficult situation. So I try not to judge him too harshly on the, you know, the wins and losses. But everything besides that, you know, there's not a reason why you shouldn't believe in what he's doing and having the turnaround that it's going to have.
And speaking of that turnaround, like, you were part of, I think, Rich Rodriguez's first class at Arizona, right? 2012. And then you were the quarterback in 2013 and year two of the Rich Rodriguez era. This is now year two of the Jed Fish era. Now, granted, his year one wasn't the same as Rich Rod's. There was no bowl game.
Right.
There was a win. But what's that like, being part of a coaching staff that comes, like being part of a roster with a new coaching staff that's coming in, trying to change a culture, trying to turn things around? Because a team before you arrived, I think, won three games, maybe four games in 2011, whatever it was. So, like, being a part of that, how long does it take to turn things around? What's it like being one of the players who's brought in to help turn things around?
Yeah, you know, from a player's standpoint, and I was a junior college guy, so when I was recruited and signed with Rich Rodriguez, he was my only Arizona coach. I didn't have anybody. I didn't have Stoops, so I wasn't a Stoops guy. So I came in as a Rich Rod guy. But, you know, there's some of these players here that were not Fish guys, right? But you have a decision to make ultimately, and that's you either buy in or you don't. And I think what it looks like, just from my perspective, from watching the sidelines, from watching, you know, everything that I can get, I think the players have bought in, and that's the most important thing. If you buy in and you put all your effort into it, good things are going to happen. And it looks like Jed is just a great guy to want to play for. You know, he makes you have fun, makes football seem enjoyable. So I don't see any reason or issue where players are not going to be fully bought in. I think they understand the importance of that, and I think they understand that they have the opportunity to completely change the direction of a program, and that's could be a huge thing.
And that's usually one of the selling points too for the new guys, for the quote unquote Jed Fish guys, probably similar to the way it was for the Rich Rodriguez guys. You came in knowing that, hey, we're here to help. We're here to change this program around. And for the people who buy in and pull the rope the same direction, I think, to borrow a Rich Rod cliche, they can do that. Was that kind of something that you felt coming in, that I imagine some of the players that have signed with Arizona, like a Jay and Delore, a T-Mac, or a Noah Fafita, the ones who have come in under Jed Fish, are feeling that same way? Like, hey, we could be the ones who can help turn this thing around. And for the holdovers, for the Kevin Sumlin players, come along with us. We're going to make this thing happen.
Yeah, I mean, when you win one game or you lose to 20 in a row, right, there's not many selling points that you can, if we're being honest, right? There's not a lot of things you can sell, you put your hat on when it comes to the program. So that's the biggest selling point is, hey, you know, you can be the reason why this thing got turned around. You can be a major part of it. Playing time, everything is going to be up in the air for you for the for the taking, because obviously the players that have been performing recently haven't been up to par. So, you know, that, yes, that's a huge selling point. It's the probably the biggest and the only selling point that we have at this point, besides just a great coach who's kind of all in. So I think it's a big thing. I'm glad that's working, and that's why guys like Speedy, I know he mentioned that's one of the reasons why he wanted to come here. I'm glad that they're using that, and I'm glad that they're choosing to go to U of A because of it. So,
yeah, and with so much roster turnover and an infusion of talent, kind of building out, you know, that culture and the program in general, you know, Arizona has more early enrollees in the spring semester than I personally can ever recall, including Jaden Delora at quarterback and Noah Fafita at quarterback, along with a number of others. I'm really curious to get your perspective, BJ, as somebody that, you know, that played at the level, and especially at the quarterback level, you know, how much of an impact does it make in terms of getting guys in early, in terms of what that we'll see in the fall, in terms of getting the system, being ready to play, et cetera? Or should we still be tempering expectations with so many new guys on the roster once the fall rolls around?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough question, because a lot of players adapt and learn at their own speed. You know, it's not one size fits all. But the more reps that you can get coming in for spring ball, and I think, what is it, 15 practices? That's so valuable, huge, especially for a quarterback, for Noah. I mean, this, the transition, and that's one of the reasons why I was so pumped about Jaden, is because, you know, no matter how great Noah is, that transition is tough from high school to college, no matter how talented you are. I mean, I coached Kyler Murray as a true freshman at Texas A&M. I coached, you know, Khalil Tate was a true freshman. Anu Solomon had a redshirt year. These are talented quarterbacks coming out of high school that just couldn't get it their first year, and not many people can. So these reps, you know, I don't know. I think T-Mac is just going to fit seamlessly. I think he's just so talented in that position. He's just so dynamic. But guys like Noah, that these young guys that don't have any college experience, this stuff in the spring ball practices are going to be huge. And the more reps you can get it, the more physical live reps you can get, the better off we're going to be.
All right, we're joined by BJ Danker here on Wildcat Radio 2.0, former Arizona Wildcats quarterback. Took him to a bowl game, won that bowl game. Some of the most fun I think Arizona fans have had in recent memory were during this season. You were there, but you mentioned that you were a coach before. You have been on the sidelines too, not just as a player, as a coach as well. And in terms of trying to fit scheme to the quarterbacks, there's one thing that I've been really interested with Jed Fish's recruiting. He's brought in all these different quarterbacks, and it seems like they all have different skill sets or different styles. And Jaden Delora is different than, say, a Gunnar Cruz or a Noah Fafita, or I guess he didn't bring in Will Plummer, but Jordan McLeod. How important is it to have a coach who kind of tailors that offense to the starting quarterback? Because I know for you, when you came in, you were a perfect fit for the Rich Rodriguez offense. You may not have been a great fit for, say, a Jed Fish offense. So to him to, you know, to take that and say, okay, you're our quarterback, we're going to mold this offense to you, how important is that as a player and us from the coaching staff side?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think you have to be able to adapt as a football coach. You have to be able to work with what you got. And, you know, obviously everyone has their basic principles and their core values and things like that when it comes to offensive schematics. But, you know, if you have a Khalil Tate, you gotta take advantage of somebody like Khalil Tate, right? His legs and his athleticism. So, you know, the thing I think about with Jalen is, you know, I think he can do a little bit of everything. So that's always a positive. You know, I thought Gunner wasn't just a limited pocket passer. I thought he was decent with his legs too. So, he wasn't pigeonholed either, but yeah, Jed's going to have, I think, I don't want to say his hands full, but he's going to have great opportunities to kind of mold this offense to fit his strengths. And he has multiple strengths. He can run, he can move a little bit, and he can throw the football. So I think he's going to be working with, you know, something good to make out of clay, mold out of clay.
Yeah. In terms of fitting the offense to the quarterback play, I'm also curious to see how Jed Fish, matches the offense to the talent infusion in the wide receiver room. How much, when you were playing, would you have loved to have the talent that's coming in this year in the fall for Arizona, BJ, especially guys like T-Mac?
Yeah. I mean, the great thing about having somebody like that is you don't even really have to draw something complicated, right? Hey, run as fast as you can downfield and go jump as high as you do and catch a football. Yeah, so I don't think it's going to be hard to find ways to get him the football. I don't think he'll struggle with ideas. The same way, you know, is when with Stanley Berryhill, you know, they found multiple ways to get him the football in space, and T-Mac's even more of a dynamic athlete than Stanley. So it's going to be fun to watch. I don't think Jed will have an issue trying to get him the football.
And of course, Jed Fish's offense is probably different than the one you played in. But when you look at this offense, you look at Jed Fish as a whole, have you seen enough in the 1 year, I guess, the games they played last season to be like, okay, this is the right guy? Because Rich Rodriguez was known as an offensive mind. When he got to Arizona, it's like, okay, this guy can coach offense. Jed Fish has the track record as a coach, but not on the field. Have you seen enough to feel good that, okay, he's got the weapons now, he'll be able to have an offense that scores some points?
Yeah, I mean, everything that I saw from the sidelines this season or on TV, you know, let's be honest, he wasn't working with the most talented roster, and we all knew that going in. And I thought he did his best that he could to try and get the ball in space to the few playmakers that we had. You know, he was limited on with quarterbacks. He tried to do everything he could to, you know, make the game slow down or scheme their way into first downs or points. You know, he's very creative in that aspect. I don't have, you know, I have a lot of confidence in his ability. He's been around the game for a long time with some of the best quarterbacks in the highest level. I'm not too concerned in that regard.
So in terms of looking ahead to the fall, BJ, you know, it's been a lot of excitement around the program, you know, with all the roster turnover, the culture being built out. You know, you've been a coach, you've been a player. You know, we're a fan podcast first and foremost, so sometimes our optimism can get the best of us.
Right.
But from your perspective, what's a realistic expectation for improvement from this year's Arizona Wildcats once the games start playing in the fall?
You know, that's so tough. You know, you see all these big splashy signees, and you think it's automatically going to translate to a bowl game. I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think that we're a bowl team yet. You obviously want to win more than one game, right? You look at the non-conference schedule, and it's pretty tough. You know, you have San Diego State, who's always going to be tough. You got, North Dakota, right? Is it North Dakota State? Like, mm-hmm. They're always a really, really strong FCS team. So, it's, you know, the non-conference schedule is pretty tough. And the Pac-12 is, you know, it's game day in and day out, week in and week out. It's always tough. So I don't have a number. I don't know if I just I just want to see improvement. I want to see some playmakers. I want to see us be more effective in the red zone. I want to see our quarterback play improve, and baby steps, right? So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
I think we're feeling the same way about that. Obviously, we'd love to see wins because that's what it comes down to. But this is year two in a what seems to be a long-term rebuilding project that might be getting sped up a little bit by the off-season success here. But before we go, BJ, I feel like we have to ask you from maybe your favorite memory of your time at Arizona, because if we look at games, the schedule, I mean, I could probably guess some of the ones that you really enjoyed. But when you look back at your time at Arizona, what really sticks out to you is something like, you know what, that was just great.
You know, the whole experience was amazing. As a junior college kid, transfer, I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to play Division I football, let alone Pac-12 football. So, you know, that's still the thing I'm most proud of is getting a scholarship and being able to play at the University of Arizona for this great university. You know, that's so special, and get to start and get to play. But you know, I think the Oregon game obviously is what sticks mind, and it definitely sticks out in my mind. Pretty crazy day, pretty special day. There's so many things about that day. It was raining, nobody was there. You know, then they show up at halftime, the Scooby and Shaq pick. You know, it's just that day was very memorable, and probably the greatest day of my life, football wise.
I have to admit, though, I think I remember having an offer to go to that game, and I'm like, the weather's going to be terrible, Arizona's going to get killed, I'll pass. And it's one of those that I regret. So thank you for making that a day that I regretted not going to Tucson, because that's the game I would have guessed. That was a lot of fun to watch that game, even on TV.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, it was senior day, so I got to walk out with my family in the middle of the stadium. But yeah, no, I remember waking up that morning at the team hotel, and it was raining, and I go, are you kidding me? We had, you know, Heisman winner Mariota coming into town. I was like, great, the Ducks brought the weather, brought the rain. And then, you know, just, it was a special day for sure.
All right, so we'll wrap it up here with that one, BJ. Although I guess the final thing is your number 7's coming out of retirement now. So how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I just saw that. I feel like I'm like the biggest fanboy, because I was touting how he was, you know, the most important recruit that we signed. And then the next day I find out he's wearing number 7. So I had to give him a little love. You know, big shout out to him. I hope he reps it proud. I know he will. Best number in football. So, you know, I'm excited to see a 7 do a whole heck of a lot better than I did. So,
I know every Wildcat fan appreciates your time at U of A, brought Arizona some wins, some excitement, that win over Oregon, a bowl game, and we would take that in a heartbeat, I'm pretty sure, again. So,
right.
BJ Danker, you can follow him on Twitter at BJ Danker, tweets a little about Arizona football too, and these days it's been a lot of positive things. But thank you for joining us on Wildcat Radio 2.0.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, so that's BJ Danker, and we come back. Let's talk some Arizona basketball.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0. Thanks again to BJ Danker for joining us. Brett, that was a lot of really good insight. We've had a lot of great guests on the show, and I like to think we're actually pretty intelligent too most of the time. But it's great to get the perspective from someone who played for Arizona and played quarterback for Arizona, especially when we're talking about guys like Delore or what's happening with the program today.
Yeah, what a fun conversation and perspective to get. And you can tell what made BJ Danker a successful quarterback in how thoughtful and analytical and effective of a communicator as he is, as you displayed in that interview. You know, it's a fun perspective to get. And I think, you know, it's also just always fun to see alumni that are connected in and excited about the direction of the program and want to see success.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully Arizona does have success in football. And of course, BJ's happy to come on. We'll be happy to have him back on too in Arizona when the wins start coming. But Brett, there probably would have been a lot more wins coming in basketball had basketball been playing. Both men and women have gotten back on the court since we last potted. Arizona men beat Washington at home. They had that game made up. The women lost at USC, their first loss of the season. But let's stick with the men's program here. They moved up in the rankings. I think they're number 6 now, and they haven't really played. they are scheduled to play this. We're recording on the 12th. They are scheduled to play Colorado and Utah this week. Colorado on Thursday the 13th, and Utah on Saturday. And I say scheduled to because I don't think any games are given these days. But, you know, for the basketball programs, but we'll stick with the men because they've had this really just crazy layoff time here. It's certainly a challenge, but I know Tommy Lloyd in his press conference, he wasn't complaining about the scheduling. He's like, hey, like, you could use this as an excuse, you could use it as a problem, or you could take this time to get better, and they're going to focus on getting better. So, I mean, we all want to see them play, and I think we're going to get to soon.
Well, more than just getting to see them play, and I'm sure Tommy Lloyd feels this way too, I think we all want to see this relatively young upstart team have some more challenging conference games. I think the UCLA game got rescheduled very conveniently for you with your tickets you had purchased previously, Adam, to be on a Tuesday night in L.A.
Well, I got my money back. I will not be going to L.A. on Tuesday night. I think it's the 25th.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I will not be going to L.A. for that one. So,
you know, hopefully that will hold and we get to play some of these games. you know, it's, as a fan that wants to see this team reach its potential, and I'm sure Tommy Lloyd feels that way even more so as the coach, I think those kind of games are going to be super valuable when it comes to March. Hopefully by March, there's no risk of games getting canceled, but I don't think we can take anything for granted. And boy, it would sure suck to not have a March Madness tournament again, which I don't think is a real likelihood, but
no,
we don't usually get to have nice things, Adam. So I'm just taking the pessimistic take as the baseline and loop from there.
A normal Arizona basketball, you'd say, they're probably just going to get bounced in the second round, and that's what's going to happen. Now the worry is like, no, they're really good, and I guess you still have that concern because every Arizona good team, it's hard to win March Madness. Be like, will the tournament happen? Will Arizona stay healthy enough for the tournament, like for them to play in the tournament, especially with the way things are going? I know there's an article in the Daily Star recently about how they've been able to defeat COVID so far, and hopefully they keep doing that because it's everywhere. But assuming that they stay healthy, like they stay out of the protocols, they don't have any of their own shutdowns, hopefully the games will start back up again. Because you're right, like, I don't know if they would have beat UCLA on the 30th, or I don't know if that would have happened, but I want to see them play that game in that environment against a really good team. Same thing with USC. I want to see them play those games. I think Arizona can win those games. I think Arizona might be the best team in the Pac-12. I mean, they're ranked sixth now, right? But they haven't had as many chances to prove it. Like, two games ago, they lost to Tennessee in a really tough game on the road, and it was an impressive loss, if there is such a thing. But they played one game since then. It was a mostly unimpressive win against Washington. Like, they looked rusty. They looked like they were kind of playing with their food again, and they pulled away in that one, especially in the second half. But we want to see them play those marquee matchups because it's like, yeah, we know this team is good, but it's nice to have that validation. And it's nice to see them play other really good teams because when they get to the tournament, if they play in the tournament, they're going to play good teams. And we want to see them go against more of them, especially in hostile environments. But, you know, I never got on board with the idea of getting mad at UCLA. The scheduling's got to be really tough, and I understand why they don't want to do certain games and certain times, push them in, squeeze them in, because like that game's supposed to be a marquee matchup. Granted, it's at 9 o'clock Arizona time, so no one back east is going to stay up to watch it. I live in Phoenix, and I may not be able to stay up all night to watch it. We'll see. But, you know, it's just that's this season, right?
Yeah. Now, I'm looking forward, assuming the game happens on the 25th, to seeing how this team handles a top 10 matchup in a completely non-hostile environment on a Tuesday night in L.A. because they're just not going to show up due to rush hour and getting to Poly Pavilion. Which I say that jokingly, but also it might be a weird thing if it's an underwhelming due to COVID and traffic and general
Will they allow
LA
fans
malaise.
To be there? I think they're not allowing fans in their building right now either.
Are they not? Yeah. So it's going to be even more of a, you know, how self-motivating can they be? Right. But there, you know, UCLA has plenty of talent. I have doubts about their ability to be consistently playing effectively as a team because I joke that they look like the UCLA fitness pickup game sometimes. A lot of one-on-one happening, but you know they should get better as the season goes along, just like we hope that Arizona does. And you need those challenges. You need to have guys that have tough individual matchups. You know, we've seen that for some of the Arizona bigs. I don't know if we've never necessarily seen those star matchups on the perimeter like you will against, you know, against UCLA for Arizona. Guys like Ben Mathurin, Kirk Carissa, you know, UCLA's got great perimeter play. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see that, how those guys react to an upgrade in talent that they haven't seen necessarily as much this year. But yeah, Hopefully it happens.
Well, and that's the thing. When they lost to Tennessee, the thought was, okay, this is a game that'll help them ultimately. They'll be a better team for this. And they've got to play once since then. We haven't been able to see if Arizona's growing. And like, there is value in practice for someone like Pelle Larsen, who's been dealing with his injury coming back from that. Having time off the court to practice isn't necessarily a bad thing. And for a team that, you know, is still learning this new system, learning to play with each other, yes, you can't replace the experience you get in games, but you can get value in practice, and hopefully they've done that. The fact that it's not their own COVID pause, you'd like to think it has happened because they've been able to practice. They've been able to get on the floor. They've been able to work out and do all the things that you like to see them do when they're not playing. But until we see it on the floor in games, it'll be like, okay, has this happened? And until we see them do it against good teams, you'll still wonder. Because, yeah, they could probably beat Washington at home in their sleep. You know, Washington's not a very – I mean, Terrell Brown's great. Like, I'm very happy for him having a monster season. But that is not a very good basketball team. UCLA is. USC is. I would have liked to see them play ASU. I think they would have spanked ASU. That game got postponed due to COVID as well. But I want to see them play ASU because that's still an environment, still a rivalry game. You know, it matters. So until they can get back on the floor, it's really hard to judge their progress. We know they're good, but it's hard to judge their progress. And hopefully they have used this time off, this, what, two games in like 3 weeks' time to improve, to rest up, to get healthy for what might be a fairly arduous stretch run, where they might get these three games in a week as opposed to the two that they're used to as the Pac-12 tries to squeeze them in.
But even that could help prep them for March, right? Where you're going to have a lot more games and a lot tighter schedule potentially. And also, Adam, we definitely want to have the ASU game rescheduled, just because, you know, I'm not one for Schadenfreude or actively rooting against ASU, but I am definitely for crushing ASU fans in a head-to-head matchup. And if they're a little down on things like, you know, their football program that's losing more players than it's adding, so be it.
I was looking forward to that game. I'm fairly confident Arizona will beat ASU when they play this season. I think Arizona's a really good team. I don't think ASU's good at all, but we still need to see it happen, right? There's nothing more cathartic than just Arizona basketball destroying ASU. Conversely, there's nothing nearly as awful as losing that game, which has happened more often than it should have in recent years. So, you know.
Indeed.
Last year would have been fun to be at. I jumped off of my couch in Arizona, won at Tempe on the buzzer beater. And if you jinxed me, I'm like, yes! Like, I was so excited about that. But, Brett, the women's team did get back on the court. You know, following, they had a three-week stretch where they didn't play either. They had their own COVID issues. They lost to USC, their first loss of the season. It was a tight game. They didn't play particularly well, missing a couple players, too. Lauren Ware's out. She's one of them. They dropped out of the top five. That's fine. it's the wonky season. How they bounce back from this, right? Like the layoff and getting back on the floor, it's not easy, but I'm still every bit as confident in this team.
Yeah, and in a weird way, I think it was like a 3.5-week layoff, you know, coincided with Lauren Ware's injury. So if those games get rescheduled, maybe it's working to your benefit of having her back for some of those. Or it gives you the benefit of not necessarily rushing her back.
You're missing Pellington too, so it's not exactly a full strength Wildcats right now.
Yeah, excitement, hopes, and expectations for the women's team after losing their first game of the year have not really fundamentally changed.
I would hope not. They lost a game. Season's over. They suck.
I mean, Adia Barnes is still getting dinner purchased from Coach Tommy Lloyd.
Well, I know he said they need to look into that because, like, you can't lose if you don't play. And, you know, like, very clever, Adia. Very clever.
That sounds like an anti-sports gambling addiction phrase. I think hopefully they'll get healthy as the season goes along, and hopefully they'll get to play more and more consistently, because boy, they're a fun team to watch. And again, let's hope COVID things start to look better so we can have them playing in March as well.
Yeah. So, like, they hopefully got back on the floor and they'll stay on the floor, get their games in. Arizona men's basketball starts up again this week in theory, and hopefully they get the rest of their games in too, because these are both very good basketball teams. We just want to see play. Like, we're excited for what they could do in March, but it's fun watching the ride, the journey to get there too, because these are teams that are good, they're winning, they're growing, and as you start to think of what could be, but, I mean, it's like watching. Like, we're fans. You know, we're podcasters here. We cover them in a little in our own way, but we're fans. It's fun watching Arizona basketball, especially this season, men's and women's, and having them not be able to play, and it's understandable. Like, this is a weird time still. It's not like it was last season where they're playing in empty gyms. Like, we were hoping things were back to normal. They're not quite there, but we still might be, you know, it's a squiggly road. It's a curvy road to get to where, you know, get to March, but hopefully they can each navigate it well and get there.
Let's hope so. And you know, let's not even undersell the base impulse about these teams as fans. Both of these teams are not only good, they're really damn fun to watch. And, you know, don't underestimate that in terms of what makes us want to get them back and playing on the court. I know for me, it's one of the bigger factors that makes it even more enjoyable, maybe even more fun than just winning.
So, more enjoyable, Arizona, watching Arizona basketball or watching a Jed Fish offseason?
Oh, man.
To tie up our show, to tie things in a nice little bow, what's more enjoyable?
I mean, watching a win is more of a short term rush, and this offseason is each day it just feels like it's building on the prior day's excitement. So it's a little more more, and it's a little more tantric for the enjoyment you get out of it. It's a little longer lasting, Adam.
I think that works. I would tend to agree. But either way, and of course, baseball's going to be starting up soon too. Softball as well. So they're all good programs. Like, all these programs are supposed to be among the best in the conference, if not the country. I mean, not football, obviously. But, you know, their offseason has been, like, their recruiting has been among the best in the country. So yeah. we can make that claim.
Can we just, you know, we talked about the year in review kind of stuff. Do you remember how pessimistic almost all of the Arizona programs were relatively 12 plus months ago?
They say 12 months ago, I mean, women's basketball was really good. We knew that. But men's basketball was already postseason banned, self-banned. So it was like, okay, we'll see. Football was football.
Not great. I'm just saying, you know, there was questions around some of the hires and some of these other things. And, you know, it's been a rough couple of years for Arizona sports in the broadest sense. You know, there was some success, like women's basketball especially. But boy, is there a program that's not trending up right now? I'm not sure there is.
Yeah, especially among the big ones. Like, there's obviously a bunch of little smaller programs that we don't devote as much time to, but we'll get to them, especially when there's news. But yeah, I'm not mad about things right now. I'm feeling pretty good. And hopefully, again, the basketball teams get to have these games that are scheduled, that they get to play them. Of course, we'll talk about those games when they do happen, if they do happen. And we'll be back next week with more Wildcat Radio 2.0. In the meantime, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, on Spotify. If you are on iTunes, give us a rating. Give us a review. We will read that review on the show. Otherwise, follow us on Twitter at Wildcat Radio AZ. And until next week, remember to bear down.
Bear down.